Next, we're on the agenda.
On the record?
Okay.
All right. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Kitsap County Planning Commission meeting for September 17th, 2019. It's 5:30, and we'll begin, as we always do, with introductions. My name is Kim Allen. I'm the chair, and I'm from South Kitsap.
Joe Phillips, North Kitsap.
Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
Richard Shattuck, Central Kitsap.
Jim Swenson, South Kitsap.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
And we want to say a welcome to Amy. She's joining us for the first time today, a new planning commissioner. Want to tell us a couple of things about yourself?
Sure. Again, my name is Amy. I live in Kingston, Central Kingston. And let's see, I work as an environmental consultant. And before that, I was a librarian for about 10 years. I've lived in Kingston for about 3 years now. I guess that's the exciting stuff.
Welcome. you're jumping in knee-deep in the middle of many, many big topics, so feel free to reach out if you need any help or catch up with any of us or staff. I'm sure that we'll all help you to help you, and welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay, with that, we'll move to, are there any changes or corrections to the agenda? Can we have a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
I will second.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor, signify by raising your hand very high. All those opposed, do the same. And it passes unanimously. All right. We have approval of the minutes. We have minutes before us for July 30th, 2019, and August 20th, 2019. Amy, just for your own information, you do have the choice to abstain because you weren't at those meetings.
I will choose to abstain then. That makes sense.
Okay. We'll bring these then to a vote. Do we have a motion on the minutes of July 30th, 2019? Motion
I'll
to
move
approve?
Approval.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion or corrections or edits to those minutes? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of approving those minutes, signify by raising your hand very high. All those opposed? All those abstaining, raise your hand high. And we have one abstention. All right, moving on to the minutes of August 20th, 2019. Do we have a motion to approve those minutes?
Move to approve the minutes for August 20th.
Second.
Okay. Any discussions, edits, or corrections to those minutes? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of approving the minutes, signify by raising your hand very high. All those opposed? And all those abstaining with one abstention, and the motions pass. Right, moving on to our item D, which is general comment on matters that are not before the Planning Commission this evening. We have no one in the audience, so we will move on to our item E, which is the work study and public hearing on the timber code harvest update. We're not having a public hearing?
That shouldn't be on the agenda.
Yeah, I thought I saw that on the agenda when I checked this morning.
All right. Well, then we'll go back and make that correction. It is a work study on the timber harvest code update.
No, I don't think it's just stricken.
Okay.
Right. Is it just off the agenda, Amanda?
Are we not having item E? This is the one you gave me. There is no item E? Okay. There is no item E. That makes for a much shorter evening than I planned.
Order, do we need to then go back?
And I believe we do.
Do we? Can I make a motion that we come back to this evening's minutes and have it approved as amended with E stricken? Is that correct languaging?
On the agenda, I'm sorry.
Okay. So my motion would be that we revisit the approval of the minutes with the edit that E is stricken. Sorry, I said minutes again, and I'll say agenda again to correct myself.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? All those in favor, signify by raising your hand. All those opposed? And it passes unanimously. All right, tentatively moving on to item F, work study 2019 comprehensive plan amendment CPA update. We have Peter, Liz.
Your evening is about to get even shorter.
Okay.
So all I'm going to report is this is Dave Ward for the record. All I'm going to report is that the schedule for the comp plan is sliding. So we have nothing on the agenda for tonight, and Peter Best is working to get the schedule revised and updated, and we'll get the revised schedule out to you.
Okay, thank you for the report, Dave. Does this have any impact on our next meeting on the 24th?
It could, yes.
Okay. All right.
It likely will.
Caveat that there will still be a meeting on the 24th. We're
yes.
still planning to do the use table as one of the work study items.
Okay. Okay. All right. With that, we will close off item F. Thank you for the report. And move on to item G in this fast-moving agenda this evening. This is the zoning use table update. Liz Williams.
Thank you. So this evening we have the third of four work study sessions regarding the use table update project. So the kind of game plan that we laid out for this evening is that we would review a summary of proposed changes, which was attachment one in your agenda packet, obtain input from the Planning Commission on allowing commercial uses in some of our residential zones and vice versa. And then review proposed land uses, level of permit review, and definitions that any of the commissioners would like to discuss in greater detail. So we've taken the version that was provided at the last meeting, and we've actually done some track changes to those levels of permit review, have added definitions to uses that don't currently have definitions, and made some slight modifications to existing definitions that we have in code today. So if that sounds good to everyone, we can get started and go from there. Can you hear me okay? A little closer, okay, thanks. All right. So I'll start out with attachment one in your packet, which is the summary of changes as of September 3rd, 2019. Part of what we wanted to provide was an overview of some of the guiding questions for recommending changes to the level of permit review. I think at the last work study session, the Planning Commission had asked for a little more clarity on kind of what were the guiding discussions internally as we were going through and recommending changes to the level of permit review. So we wanted to lay out some questions that we were using to kind of guide our review of that. Most significantly, we've been looking at the purpose and intent statements of the zones, which we did provide to you at the last work study session. That was attachment three in your packet. And then we also considered, you know, would the proposed change preclude achieving the purpose or intent of that zone? So if we made the change to the land use, you know, across the landscape, is that going to preclude us achieving that purpose and intent? A couple of the big goals of this project was to ensure that we're removing barriers to investment within the unincorporated urban growth areas and then within the rural commercial and rural industrial zones. So we wanted to make sure that we were thinking about that as we were making recommendations. And then as we do with most of our code changes, we also wanted to look at, you know, how does this align with the goals of GMA, the Kitsap Countywide Planning Policies, and then the goals and policies in the Kitsap Comprehensive Plan. And then I did forget to mention, too, we did this, you know, rather large countywide survey. And we got a lot of public feedback in terms of what folks would like to see built in their neighborhoods over time. And so that's another piece that we've been utilizing to guide kind of the recommendations as they move forward. So I'm hoping that helps provide a little more clarity to the group.
Definitely. I thought it was very helpful to have these questions, you know, framed out. I thought the whole packet this week was very helpful.
Good.
In my review of the the extensive use table.
It's a big job, and we want to make it as easy as we can.
Yeah, just trying to wrap your arms around the whole mission is a challenge, I think.
Yeah, and to be honest, it took us in the department a little while to kind of get our heads around. Okay, how do we all collectively soak this in and process all this information? So I think zeroing in on those questions helped us as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. So we also wanted to kind of call out some of the new uses, the uses that we're proposing to split out and then also combine with this particular effort. So the second section kind of gives you a list of the proposed new land uses that would be added into the categorical listing, so the use tables that we have currently. Some of them do exist already in other chapters of our code. So for example, the marijuana retailer, the wireless communication facilities, there are specific chapters dedicated to those land uses that lay out levels of permissibility. But as part of this effort, we'd like to incorporate those into the actual use table so that folks then can know it's an allowed use and then know where they need to go to see where additional standards may apply to those particular ones. And then you'll see new uses that don't show up in our table. For example, things like a domestic violence shelter, adaptive reuse of a commercial building, and you know, some temporary and accessory uses, indoor, outdoor shooting and gun ranges. Those new uses came from our comparison of land uses across jurisdictions where we were finding gaps that we hadn't identified these particular uses within our use table. And then also some that had been on our list of proposed code changes. So over time, we've developed this catalog of suggestions for changes that both internal and external stakeholders would like to see. And so we've tried to incorporate them as much as possible. And I'm happy to, you know, the team's here to go into any more detail you'd like about specific new uses that we've identified. Or if there's others.
I was going to propose that we, you know, kind of chunk on this for a little while.
Sure.
I found it really helpful that you had the definitions for these as well.
Yeah.
So with that, we'll open it up to questions.
Well, one of the things, again, that I thought our goal was to simplify this. I mean, these are things I saw garage sales. And so we now were telling Kitsap County residents, boy, we're going to be regulating garage sales. And it struck me as completely over the top surprising. That. And so do we have some thoughts on why the county is getting involved with garage sales?
Yeah. So it's my understanding from a code enforcement standpoint, there have been a few instances across the county where there have been landowners that have actually set up kind of permitted garage sales where they're operating 365 days a year in a residential area. It's causing traffic concerns and other issues for certain neighborhoods. And so the thought would be not requiring a high intensity level of permit review, having it be a temporary use permit, and then putting a few sideboards on, you know, the number of sales that you can have within a calendar year. And it's not inconsistent with other communities that we've taken a look at, but it is definitely a new direction for the county.
So, again, I didn't find it in the use table itself. So if I'm in urban low, it's going to be
permitted as a temporary use, which means you can only operate a certain number of calendar years in a day, in a year. And so it would cut down on that, those instances of someone having a garage sale every single day.
So I don't have to apply. If I'm going to have the family garage sale, I don't have to come down to the county. It just gives code enforcement a tool. If I've done 10, that code enforcement can use the code.
That's kind of the direction I think that the recommendation will head in. But obviously we're open to feedback at this point. And seeing if this is a direction that the Planning Commission would support heading in.
I had that same thought because I think you used the word get a permit when you were, the phrase get a permit when you were talking, explaining this use. And so I would not like to see the average homeowner have to apply for a garage sale permit. That seems over the top. But I have lived in proximity to the eternal garage sale in residences past, and, you know, with the things that get left out on the property from week to week and things like that, it definitely is something that code enforcement could use some tools on.
Yeah, a lot of jurisdictions wrestle with this one, especially the more urban jurisdictions wrestle with this. I think the extreme one, as I recall, was, I think it was Bothell that restricted all garage sales to one day out of the year. And so everybody does their garage sale on the exact same day, and then it's kind of a free-for-all traffic-wise.
Other questions on the new use section? I had one. I like the new use, the maker space, kind of. But that was in the definition skewed toward sort of crafts, sort of the things that you could sell on Etsy, sort mm-hmm. of home crafts. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you thought about kind of an incubator space use that would be more in office commercial. For people that work from home, and it's a multi-purpose space skewed more towards tech and office uses, right, rather than the makerspace.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion, and that is one that we've tried to the makerspace. There's these incubator businesses, makerspaces, and so we're trying to, in that instance, merge and consolidate uses, and I think our intent is to capture both, but it sounds like the definition could use a little more clarity.
It really seemed very artisan in mm-hmm. the examples that were given, and I thought, well, if I needed to rent a conference room,
right,
or an office for a couple of days,
exactly,
I didn't see that use there.
Okay.
And you may check with Bainbridge, where they have expats, is that, right, or Paulsbo, where Vibe is that, mm-hmm. how do they define if they've
right.
done it correctly or tied it to craft also,
okay,
just for wording.
Yeah. Is there anything missing from the list that you would have anticipated to see? Just want to make sure that we take it from all angles.
For the whole thing or just for new uses?
Just for new uses at this point. I'm not inviting more new uses, but... the wedding facilities. We are likely going to suggest that wedding facilities actually change to event facilities. Wedding facilities is pretty specific to one type of event that could occur on a property. So wanting to be encompassing of more than just one single particular event, that definition will likely expand to include other event type activities, other than weddings.
I may be bridging into not new, but how have you guys gone about the whole short-term, long-term rental,
yeah,
Airbnb versus
sure. yep.
month-to-month?
Absolutely. So there is currently a special project that is focusing in on short-term vacation rentals in particular. So that is being led by the county's policy division. Where my understanding of where that project is at right now, they've conducted quite a bit of outreach, and they're now in the portion of the development of that code where they're actually doing some focus group sessions to hone in on policy level kind of guidance for crafting that code. And so as part of this effort, we're not proposing any changes to the level of permit review to bed and breakfasts or to short-term vacation rentals, that and will allow that other project to kind of facilitate those changes as they go on. But what we are proposing to do is split bed and breakfast houses and short-term vacation rentals into separate uses. And then one of the footnotes that we have actually sets out different levels of permit review based on the number of bedrooms for both bed and breakfasts and short-term vacation rentals. So under the heading of bed and breakfast house, you'll see in the final draft of proposed changes bed and breakfast, and then 1 to 4 bedroom, and then 5 or more. Yep. And then for the short-term vacation rentals, similar, where you've got the 1 to 4 and then 4 or more.
Thank you.
What would the thinking be behind that? The a higher level of review depending on the number of bedrooms?
Vehicle.
Yeah, I think it comes down to vehicle impacts, traffic impacts.
Or septic.
Yeah, that too. So
and,
I think it's just
and also
scaling.
How loud it can get, too, for the neighbors.
I had a question on the food truck use. That's listed as temporary, and that's great. That's a good amenity, you know, to add to the community. My caution would be not to make it too constrained. There are a number of businesses, brew pubs, things like that, that will invite a food truck for one day a week to come and be the Tuesday special or something like that. And I would not want to discourage that by being too restrictive on the on the how you define temporary.
Sure. I don't know. Carmen, do you want to speak to the mobile vending component of that as well?
Yeah, so I had a brief conversation with one of our current planners yesterday, and she said that there had been on that side of the house, they've been getting demands for permit applications for mobile vendors. So she's currently processing one that would be an art sales. So where this is a use that we're considering expanding that definition to include more than just food trucks. So it could be sort of a mobile sales service vendor type use.
Yeah, I think that's great. I know that over in Redmond, where I used to live, they had folks that would take a truck to groom your dog or cut your hair, or, you know, all sorts of innovative, you know, we come to you kind of services. Mm-hmm. So I think that to expand that out into a kind of a bigger category would be a good idea. All right. Anything else on the new uses?
Will we be reviewing definitions that along the way? Should I remark that in my own head?
So there should be definitions for all of these new uses in your packet for this week's meeting, and in attachment 2. And with the changes that we're discussing this evening, with kind of expanding some of those definitions, those will carry through as the project develops further. So you will be seeing them again revised.
There's one or two I'll ask about every time we meet.
I hope so.
While you're here.
I know.
I hope so.
When you revise Exhibit 2, can you flag for next time the new ones or the change, the
sure.
ones that you've changed?
We can make a note to do that. All right. And I will say, too, we're going to update this summary document as well as we move forward, because it's just a quick reference guide to the 60 or 70 page use table document.
Very helpful.
Yeah.
One thing that we're trying to be very conscious of is that this is going to be it's difficult to track it now. As we move forward, we're going to have a good way to track it within our own permitting systems. Once we're ready to put all this down, and then all of a sudden our permitting folks are working on it, they're going to have to be able to process it. We're going to have to be able to advise the entire building community and everybody else who's been working on a table that has a certain look and feel over time, and we want to be able to have a here's what you used to see as this now looks like this. Type key, so that way people can wade through it and understand it and hopefully not burn too much time.
Yeah. Crosswalk would be very helpful, just to have that available electronically between past and present. And,
yeah, so we're trying to think about that ahead of time as we pull this stuff together for you.
And for folks that are going to be very, you know, hands-on with the new use table and everything, you know, might want to think of having a reveal party, you know, a new code reveal party, you know.
Exactly.
Something like that, you know, just some sort of community event. You know, round table.
Yeah, we know we're going to have to train staff, and we can extend that same kind of training to the community.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I noticed that we now have, we listed as a new service, airport services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that?
So formerly that particular use in the use table was basically a laundry list of different types of activities that could occur at an airport. And so what the proposal is at this time would be to take that laundry list of uses, and I'm thinking, Darren, if you scroll down right there, this one here, so uses necessary for airport operations such as runways, hangars. So the definition for airport really focuses in on the runway and anything that would be on the airport site, where airport services would be more so geared towards things like accessory uses. So a restaurant, for example, that may function and support the airport as a use, but not be specific to.
But as I recall, we had removed the airport code from a while back. We had actually said, oh, Bremerton's got it.
Yeah.
We left it. Mm-hmm. Now I'm assuming that you're talking about APEC.
Potential, yeah, existing airports or potential new, airports that may crop up across the country.
There's Apex, there's the one on Sydney as well, Port Orchard.
Right. And there's also the Marine Airport at Paulsboro.
Right.
I would say that we need to start getting ready for a new type of service. I noticed that we had helicopter pad. Mm-hmm. You might want to expand the definition there to include drones and such, because that's the direction the industry's headed in.
It's a good thing to think about. We tried to anticipate that with electric vehicle charging stations and
right.
some of that other,
right.
As the fueling pumps dwindle over time.
Well, and I think you may have mentioned it last week, but the notion of the services as support services to a primary facility was something that we ran into with marinas as well, mm-hmm. where you have the actual marina on the water, but then there's all these support services, the boat yard, the storage maintenance facilities, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Well, we want to keep the drone launching services away from the airport uses, I think.
Well, they're coming to the reality that you can't really. They are approving drone uses at airports with specific controls on them, and that the hobby drones are still forbidden. But
well, and we already have a new code for drones around military facilities as well,
which was totally unnecessary. But fine. Anyway.
It got dialed back quite a bit from where that one started.
Okay, so this is the place where you're shrinking the categories instead of splitting the categories.
Right? Yeah. So on page 2 of attachment 1 is where we are proposing to combine uses that are similar into new uses. And so the left-hand column is the original uses. The right-hand column is what we're proposing for the new use. And so I'm happy to go through them individually or if you have any specific questions. Essentially, we looked at definitions. Some of them weren't defined currently, but looking at other codes from surrounding jurisdictions, we felt as though the new uses were, more modern in some instances, or were able to capture the same intent as the original uses. This has gone through internal review and will be an area where you'll see some changes moving forward, but we wanted to get your feedback on the original proposal and see if they align with the current staff get some further guidance on them. But for example, we have in our use table currently residential care facilities and convalescent care facilities where we'd be proposing just to go to assisted or independent living facilities. And that could be for seniors or other individuals that may need those additional services.
But just convalescence is usually a temporary stay.
I don't don't think that's how our definition looked at it.
Because that's having had a elder mother-in-law.
Sure.
Understood. Mm-hmm. They get hurt, they go to the convalescence home, and then they come out back to their residential
sure.
area. Their so your new title, assisted or independent living facility, I think you're missing some of the medical situation that goes on with like convalescent care.
Okay.
So is there a category that is more in line with rehabilitation? That's a temporary languaging.
Right.
So this just says, for convalescent care, it just says for a period in excess of 24 consecutive hours and furnished with meals and nursing care for hire.
That's also a hospital, but.
Yeah. I guess the current definition of convalescent care. Yeah, I don't know that that's picked up in the new definition of assisted and independent living facility.
I guess from a neighborhood compatibility perspective, is there a whole lot of difference for the neighbors?
Yeah.
Would they see a substantial difference in what you suggested for that short-term stay versus the longer-term stay?
Because you actually
there
do.
There are visitors.
Well, convalescents always got a flow of people coming and, you know, new patients, people leaving. Depending on the family structure, how many visitors and all that. Assisted and independent living facilities, generally, that they're pretty stable. Their turnover is not as great. And sad to say, their visiting isn't as great.
Yeah. Well, the turnover, I'll concur, is different than that. But, I mean, my personal observation with independent living and assisted living is that there's a lot of family that visits there on a regular basis on some of these facilities. So I'm not sure what the answer to that question.
Well, a convalescent facility I think is a little bit more like a hospital, mm-hmm. where patients are coming and going for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks at a time to rehab, and until they're ready to go back to their assisted living facility. So you'd have increased traffic. You'd have a lot of patients who are using those facilities, being elderly, are delivered by ambulance, mm-hmm. without lights and sirens or with, But they travel, they're transported that way, so that would be an impact on the neighborhood. I'm not sure where the zoning
takes these. The convalescent, both facilities get ambulance calls frequently.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking up the definition of hospital, and convalescent care is included in our current definition of hospital.
Yeah, because I would – okay. So actually, your original use, convalescent care facility, should
be under
be
hospital.
Under hospital.
Right. Mm-hmm. In the table.
Okay. Because, residential care, I like the definition assisted or independent living facility, because usually that's the way they portray themselves, and
in terms of reviewing this stuff, it seems to me really the focus should be more on, are there zones where we would say, oh, this is convalescent, so we need a CUP as mm-hmm. opposed to an ACUP,
mm-hmm.
and so if that distinction jumps out, let's really focus on it. Otherwise, the semantics may be important, but as a practical matter for our purpose here, it's an exercise. What zone would you say, convalescent, we need a CUP, where if it was residential facility, you just need an ACUP.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see any zone where we would draw that distinction. So I think anything to simplify that table, let's do it.
Would you concur that convalescent care could be lumped under hospital, under that definition? Or would that be different uses or different impacts?
I would say it fits under hospital because it is the halfway house to going home for most people. You go to a convalescence to get the physical therapy, to get the care until you're ready to take care mm-hmm. or somebody take care of you.
Can I suggest that size maybe is an important factor, maybe more important than temporary versus long-term? Because there are, I'm picturing, you know, like the place that my grandparents lived at the end of their life was a huge complex with, I don't know, hundreds of residents potentially, with a big dining hall and all of that, versus there are, I think they're called group homes or something, that just look like houses in regular neighborhoods. They are houses in regular neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And the residents are cared for by the house owners, mm-hmm. which would be very appropriate for a residential neighborhood versus a giant care facility would not.
I think we do make that distinction right now, because what you described in the former would be an assisted or independent living facility. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's kind of the form that most of them
The latter is called an adult family home, typically, and I think it is. It has its own restrictions of six or less and one per three, and, you know, it's pretty well defined that it fits in a house.
And it's a growth industry.
Right.
Actually, both of them are.
Yeah.
So then moving on to some of the other combined uses, you know, we have a number of retail-like uses. So the auto parts and accessory stores, boat and marina supply stores, arts and craft stores. Those we're proposing to lump under just general retail merchandise stores. And that particular use is scaled based on the square footage of the facility. So it goes from 4,000 to, I think, over, was it 25,000 square feet into different levels of permit review.
Was it just those three that got lumped, or were there more?
Just those three.
Mm-hmm. And then storage. This has been an area of a lot of discussion. I think what you'll see in the revised version moving forward is contractor storage yard may come out of the storage outdoor and continue to be a standalone use, particularly because of the current level of permissibility does allow this within rural residential areas or rural areas in general, but there are footnotes that do require on-site or the owner to be on-site. Where the outdoor storage does not have that provision associated with it. But then moving to indoor storage, the cold storage facilities or storage self-service, we felt that those both could be lumped into storage indoor.
So is there a warehouse category?
We do have a warehouse and distribution category currently, yes.
Okay.
Well, I have to say, during the time that I was the hearing examiner here in Kitsap County, many of the code enforcement issues that I dealt with had to do with the contractor storage yard. That is a very troublesome use in residential and generated the highest level of controversy. So I'd love to see a lot of specifics around that particular definition. To give guidance to those who must.
If you have any suggestions from that experience, we would appreciate it. We agree. It's been a tricky one.
Yeah. Well, I was like in the, where was I? I just took some notes. The definition of home business, I remember one matter that ended up, were they conducting business within the dwelling? And so my suggestion is to change the definition to conduct the business entirely within the dwelling, because there was some question about were they doing the books in the dwelling, but doing activities outside, and it was a similar type of a challenging use in a residential.
In that particular example, would it make sense to do it to say that the business is conducted on the parcel rather than in a particular structure on the parcel?
Well, it's required to be in the dwelling, and I think that from the neighbor's perspective, that's what they want. You know, in terms of minimizing the impacts on surrounding properties, if they're conducting a business in the shell of the dwelling, you know, there's less concern about what's going on than if, you know, all of a sudden there's a few sheds going up, and or there's some sort of agricultural, something going on, in the back corner of the property near the neighbor's fence. You know, as long as everything's within the dwelling, a home business, it makes sense with the definition and the impacts where this is allowed, as opposed to.
You'd have a different opinion if I made birdhouses, if it totally happened in the office versus I'm running the bandsaw in the driveway
exactly.
8 hours a day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Different interaction with your neighbors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. And any other questions on the lumping and splitting, or I guess the combining of uses that you're seeing?
Yeah. I have one question, sure. Or maybe concern.
Sure.
Recycling facilities being lumped in with manufacturing and fabrication. I know that recycling facilities, depending on what they're recycling, can have a really large environmental footprint. And so the difference between a recycling facility and like a junkyard, wrecking yard, I found the definition of a junkyard, wrecking yard, and it specifically excludes recycling facilities. So I guess I would be interested in knowing what defines a recycling facility as separate from a junkyard, mm-hmm. and just make sure that that is more of just a transfer station for clean recycling waste versus, it might contain fluids, mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
Okay.
You're thinking the distinction between bottles and cans versus appliances or something like that?
Yeah.
Chronic carburetors.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did say carburetor,
right? He did, yeah.
Okay.
You light them up, burn the fuel off, and then recycle.
Well, it says boat yard. I assume that must mean that auto yard is already in the category.
So that is a separate categorical use that I believe we're trying to lump with auto and recreational vehicle sales. And that particular one, if I remember correctly, boatyard, is one that would actually, based on internal discussions, come out and not be lumped with manufacturing and fabrication. The conversation really centered on the fact that, you're going to have boats on jacks, stored outside.
Right, I'm reading it. Yeah. In my head, it's a visual comparison.
Right. Yes, and so
chain link fences without slats in them, you can see everything going on behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and so that particular one, given the nature of the use, it probably does not lend itself to being merged, and so you'll see that one coming out as well. You guys are hitting on all the same things we've been discussing, so it's great to see there's alignment in thinking.
So one question I wanted to put to the group is, and Carmen's going to laugh because we've talked about this before, is the Air Pilot Training School. Mm. And the reason I bring that up is because just south of the border on the Key Peninsula and on the Gig Harbor Peninsula, there's a little bit of controversy going on because of the flight school that flies out of the Gig Harbor Airport. The reason I raised the question is because the flight pattern is different for a training school than it is for the airport itself. With the airport itself, airplanes take off, fly over the neighborhoods surrounding the airport, and then the plane is gone until the next one decides to take off. Whereas the schools just do loops and loops and loops and loops and loops, to the point where a lot of the neighborhood blogs south of the border are lighting up because of it.
Yeah.
So I'm just throwing the question out there. We don't have as many local airports, that have that level of activity, but I'm just throwing that out there.
But with any airport, you have a flight approach pattern that if it's non-towered, you're going to come in and do essentially a circle around the airport. So no matter whether you're doing it for training or you're leaving or coming, you're going to be flying that same pattern. whether it's done by a school plane or, you know, a private pilot, it all comes down to doing the same approach, same pattern. And unfortunately, I think we're discussing an issue where the airport was there, and then areas around it got developed, and all of a sudden, those planes. You know, it's a who got there first kind of, but yeah. I'm just saying that flying, you follow the patterns.
I think there might be an intensity of use, though. My son's getting his pilot license right now, and so he spends a whole Saturday afternoon doing touch and goes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so one after another, and then you multiply that by the number of students that you have in the air, and you might have a much greater intensity of flow through that airport than you would if it was just people taking off and landing.
Well, but at the same time, weekend comes, everybody's out flying. Pilots, you know, the private pilot jumps in their plane, and they're going to go flying too. And a lot of times they will do the same thing as the student pilots just to keep themselves current on their abilities and that. So to say that as training school, that now we're, I don't know.
Of course. Clearly there's a difference, or Dave wouldn't have brought it up, right? That at a community level, the civic feedback is saying we've seen a difference.
So the neighborhood blogs noticed that. People right. are noticing it.
So does a pilot have a path? Yeah, but it's not 16. I mean, it's 16 circles around my house, not, hey, take off, see you tomorrow or later that day. So it's obviously an intensity of use discussion.
And the question is, what do we do about it in this context? And I don't have an answer to that question.
I will note that the level of permit review for airport is a conditional use permit where those types of conditions could be addressed through that hearing examiner decision or where currently the air pilot training schools are all permitted by right in multiple zones. So right now we're saying that's a permitted use. We don't have any development controls on it where we would actually be reducing we would increase the level of permit review to a conditional use. So it could address some of those neighborhood compatibility concerns.
This also brings up a question from the other end. When you have a developer come in and write in a flight path, want to put 100 homes, you know, who speaks up and says, well, you're going to have this activity, it's already here, it's already established, understand that that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I know it, you know, usually it falls on deaf ears for a buyer, but, mm-hmm. you know, well, somewhere along the line, somebody should be making sure that the buyer is aware of where their house fits in a flight pattern.
Mm-hmm. There is, new developments are being done. Routine right now, we're doing navigation easements, and so there is something that's put up record on the house when you get your title policy that says, look, at there's a navigation easement over your home, and expect aircraft over your house.
I think you make a really good point. You know, it's kind of like moving in next to a farm and then complaining about that the animals stink. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. The distinction that I see in the situation that I described is that the air school went in after and ramped up its activities after a lot of people had already moved in, you know, because a lot of people have been complaining that, well, it used to be nice and quiet. Now I hear airplanes over my house every Sunday afternoon. So
I think it should be a conditional use permit.
So I'm just throwing the issue out there. I don't want to dwell on it, but it's just something that I've.
We've got a couple of rounds of this, so I mean, if this was day one of start chewing on it, okay, we will.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. All right. Last, page 3 of attachment 1 is just the land uses that we're proposing to split into various different categories. So
are you at least not making new, or you you're making less new categories than what you combine?
I think overall we're netting more uses than we had before. You know, but this particular piece here is really about scaling the land use for a neighborhood from a neighborhood compatibility standpoint. So bed and breakfast houses, it was a natural kind of migrating in that direction because we have footnotes and different level of permit review based on the different I guess components of the bed and breakfast house. So if it's, you know, just a 1-4 bedroom, you know, it has a different level of permit review for the 5 or more serving outside guests. And so it's just, it's a way for us to, number one, get rid of footnotes, be more predictable for our customers, and reduce surprises, which are main goals of this particular project. And then, you know, moving on the automobile service stations, anticipating, you know, that transition away from fossil fuel over time to more charging stations, electric vehicle usage. Recognizing that some of those have convenience stores, some of them do not, and trying to split them out that way. The automobile and boat repair car washes, yes, they do sometimes go in conjunction with each other, but not always, and recognizing that rather than lumping them together. Equipment rentals, we had one category where we're proposing to have three. This is based on a comparison of surrounding jurisdictions and kind of how they look at the different types of equipment rental, and recognizing that, you know, there are different types of equipment that you are potentially renting. Pet shops and grooming facilities, this we would bucket into existing categorical uses, so the general retail and personal service for standalone grooming uses. You know, a person getting their haircut versus a dog getting their haircut, you know, it's pretty much the same kind of intensity of use. One might be a little louder than the other, but.
I scream a lot.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I get my 5 hairs cut.
Nails. It's usually pretty loud in the hair salon when I go in there. And then museums, galleries, aquariums. Aquariums, you know, we felt that may be bucketed, or sorry, it would be better suited with like a zoo. Mm-hmm. They're very similar in terms of their impacts and use of the land. And then research laboratory is one where we're scaling similar to your retail and office uses. Again, recognizing that you could have just a very small scale research lab in a downtown where no one really knows what's going on within the building, to a very, very large research laboratory like the NOAA labs that
campus.
Yeah, or a campus.
So is there in this, I assume in the permitting process, there would be some discussion about what type of research? In other words, if you're playing with biohazards, mm-hmm. you know, there might be much more restrictions on that than sure. if you're just doing a...
A good point, you know, for the definition that we'll need to make sure yeah. we're clear about that, or development
what,
standards.
What type of research needs to be specified on the permit?
Yeah.
What's the current thought process around every 5,000 square feet, you know, to the point of 5 categories, not 2 or 3?
Yeah, I think this one models the retail uses. There is the office facilities does have less categories broken out.
This research to me does not parallel retail. Retail to me says public visitation.
Customers.
Right.
Yeah, I think this is more suited to an office.
That looks a little chunky to me.
People go to work in the morning, they come home at night, and you don't have the day trips that
yeah.
you would have
okay.
with retail.
Yeah.
But Joe's right. I mean, you know, are we studying penguins or plutonium? That's probably important.
I think we should pay some attention to that.
Good point.
It's Kitsap County. I think we're more likely to be studying plutonium.
Yeah. And then public and private schools is another one where we would be splitting out. Right now it's just one general category, but recognizing that there's different types of schools and different types of impacts related to those schools. Public facilities, this is another one where it's kind of a laundry list of different types of uses that have very different impacts on the landscape. And so wanting to recognize that they fall into categories that exist currently, but, you know, just being more clear about the non-marine and marine terminals versus your public facilities, which are, you know, your essential facilities that you need to plan for as a jurisdiction. And then crematoriums, this one we're splitting out into cemeteries and funeral homes. And the last one is, again, food and beverage production, pulling out.
Sorry to pause you. Which category does crematoriums go into when you separate them?
I believe
it's picked up in the definition of funeral homes.
Got it.
On the food and beverage front,
yep.
Where would a winery go? You have brewery, distillery.
I think it would fall under this definition.
Yeah,
yeah, I think if you look at the definition of.
Because there's some agricultural components to it as well. I think I live right by the Olala Winery.
Right, yeah. And I know that is one that we're still looking at. So the agricultural code does allow for accessory uses,
right.
And so there is. I'm going to let Darren speak to it because he's the ag expert.
Okay. Is that picking me up? Okay. So yes, there are distinctions between winery, vineyards. You can have both. Typically, a winery is something where you're having something delivered, like hops for a brewery, and you're creating the wine. The agriculture code is identifying it as an accessory use, so you technically have the something on the land that's a farm.
Right.
So there are some distinctions there that it could be identified in here differently as winery versus a vineyard. If
this
that's
has
what
gotten
you're
really tricky in Woodinville lately because of the distinction between tasting rooms, standalone tasting rooms that have no, you know, have no agriculture on them versus a winery that has an accessory use as a tasting room versus, you know, a vineyard that is actually growing all the product that goes into the wine. So it's a use that may, you know, in terms of the tasting room and small winery, you know, could be a place for some economic development going forward in the county.
And I would say don't forget the word cidery in the
yep.
same context, right?
Yep.
An apple orchard, but are they also producing
right.
an alcoholic beverage? Do they have
Absolutely.
A tasting room? Do they serve food?
Yeah. Yep.
So based on the definition of food and beverage production, it would fall under, winery would fall under this particular use if it wasn't associated with an agricultural use.
And we also took out the brewery or distillery part in the use name, so it would just be food and beverage production.
Okay. That was the part that was throwing me because you don't brew or distill wine.
Yep.
It's a third.
Once you see those two, you want to see the other two.
Yeah, exactly.
Just language
yeah.
and wine.
Yeah. Yeah. So we incorporated those two uses in addition to the wine, the vineyard or winery production. Sorry. And pick that up in the definition instead of actually listing them as examples in the categorical use.
Yeah, so that those two terms are stricken from this. And
correct.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure, like, I think it's called Bushel and Barrel. I think they're outside Paulsboro city limits, so you're going to have that. So just don't forget cidery because that industry is about where Red Hook was in 96.
Yeah, there's one, I read about one that's just off Banner Road. Somebody's got a home cidery over there.
Yeah, it's a growing industry.
Finn Rivers, yeah.
Yeah, Finn Rivers.
Out the door on
Fantastic.
A weekend.
Yeah, that's great.
So since we're all drinking, you want to mention the disposition of brew pubs as well?
Sure, yeah. So brew pubs.
Saw that earlier.
Yeah, I think that one is under. So we're actually proposing to combine brew pubs with restaurants without drive-thrus. So you could, you know, in essence, have a brew pub or a restaurant. It's just, you know, not calling them out as separate uses, combining them together.
Except, having Redmond used to have a brew pub in downtown Redmond, and the smell that came out of that when they were brewing was less than pleasant. Let's put it that way. It, depending on which way you go with it was certainly if it's in an urban area or a mixed use with residential, I wouldn't want necessarily. I would want to have some maybe different controls around that. It has an impact outside the building. Sure.
So right now, just to give you an idea of what the level of permit review is for restaurants without drive-thru, they're predominantly prohibited in all of the rural zones, and then the urban restricted and greenbelt zone, it's not allowed. Urban low, urban cluster residential are proposed to be a conditional use permit. And urban medium and urban high is proposed to be an administrative conditional use permit. And then in most of your commercial zones and industrial zones, the permitted use. So,
yeah, just so that there's some level of conditions that can be placed on the operating, the brewing hours.
Sure. And that is something that we could pick up in the standards, development standards for that particular use, limiting it, you know, the controls around smells. And then we also have the nuisance ordinance, which can pick up some of those things as well.
I would argue the same thing about Burger King.
Yeah. I was going to say that, yeah.
That's true.
The blower, that gets off-site.
Yeah. Redmond assisted living facility was proposing to locate their commercial kitchen closer to the neighborhood, and that was a big issue. You know? So, if you anything that's going to be pumping out food smells 24/7.
The one thing you just said that scared me a little bit, it was why we could put a condition on brewery. That sounds like a footnote, and so but that's an extra footnote. My suggestion would be break it out. Don't combine it. If we've got to footnote it. Break it out in the table so we don't have to try to track from here down to footnotes.
Yeah, so it would. We're not proposing to add any new footnotes. We're actually trying to get rid of them. So what you'll moving forward, and we'll discuss this at our next work study session next week, actually. And what we're proposing is actually calling out the specific development standards related to specific categorical uses. So the use table structure that you see here on the screen will continue, but we're proposing to add additional columns on the right, one that will provide a section reference to the definition of that use, and then a second column that will provide a link and section reference to standards specific to that land use. So there will be a whole new chapter created in the Kitsap County Code that will have standards for specific categorical uses.
Is that a segue or is that jumping?
That is jumping ahead a little bit.
It sounds to me like we took footnotes and blew it up, made it three times as bad as it was. So I'm skeptical. My thought was permitted ACUP, CUP, you know, prohibited, and get rid of the footnotes, let's, you know, decide what it should be. And if it needs to be conditioned, let's do it the CUP process, the ACUP process. But now, I'll wait, but I'm not sure we're helping. The concept here was to make it, as you say with your questions, let's make it easier. Mm-hmm. If I want to invest, I know I've got this right.
Right.
Fair
point. If you were a facility that brewed beer and you had a restaurant, so that would be a brew pub, I'm trying to figure out where the line is between some place that would be included under the production category versus under the restaurant category. like tasting rooms.
I think that's the shades of gray that Kim was talking about earlier.
So I guess I'm suggesting maybe that needs to be clarified.
All of these have the pure production facility on one end of the scale, and a pure serving and restaurant facility with a little bit of production, just enough to call it a brew pub and you know, or a winery and keep it plausible.
Yeah.
And then there are shades of gray in between, and that's a tricky one to figure out.
Yeah.
You know, what's the dominant use there?
One of the ways to manage that would be through the definition of restaurants, where we could say, you know, up to a certain amount of the sales of the operation. That's what we've seen in other jurisdictions.
Or square footage
of the facility dedicated to brewing. That would then kick it into the food and beverage production category.
It worked in one jurisdiction back east that did it by gallons of production.
So I think there's ways to manage that. So your point is valid and taken, and we'll definitely try to incorporate that. Okay. All right. So I think that gets us through the lumping and splitting, because we talked about airport services and airports.
She did eliminate three categories.
So the racetrack major is one that, you know, didn't really feel like we needed as a categorical use. I think it was only allowed in one zone, and it was very large scale, I think geared towards a proposal that didn't move forward in the past. So it just didn't seem like it was a needed land use at this point.
I do believe they're on the public funding for a study to do it.
A NASCAR what? Racetrack?
Well, no, a racetrack, not NASCAR.
But it would fall
but there
under
is
the,
a racetrack.
Yeah, we still have racetrack minor, which would, you know, be able to capture that particular.
How do you define minor, major?
Let me turn the mic over to Carmen.
Well, when you see racetrack minor, you do think that you should also see a major.
We could just call it racetrack.
Yeah. So the definition of minor is a publicly or privately owned course designed for the operating and racing of automobiles, motorcycles, all-terrain vehicles, or similar vehicles along a defined route. May include straightaways, curves, jumps, or other features.
And not horses.
Not horses in that definition.
And that's minor.
So let me see.
With no definition of scale.
Right.
Yeah, and then the major is, there's definitely scaling in that
one. You added a stadium seating? What?
Well, it sounds like you don't need the scale right now, but you're not really seeing, I mean, the definition of minor racetrack could be called racetrack.
Right. So major says the facility may allow for up to 6,000 spectators is how they scale that one.
But we're getting rid of that one, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So we're just shrinking it down to racetrack. And then conditional permitting and that would take care of.
Well, thinking about compatibility again, taking it to that, you know, and speaking as someone who used to live in the Monroe area, where there is a racetrack that gets used every single weekend and a lot of weekday evenings, but it's not a NASCAR track. There are some uses of that track where the sound carries a couple of miles, and that's not unusual at all. And it is very, very much a neighborhood concern for everybody who lives around it. There are some uses of that track. I live personally 11 miles from the track, so quite a distance. And there were some uses of the track where I was hearing track noise. Not frequently, because they weren't doing NASCAR there, but every now and then there would be something there. So that some sound can carry a very long distance from a racetrack. Now, how we adapt, how we consider that here, I don't know.
And then I'm assuming we're not saying mobile homes now, we're saying manufactured homes?
Right.
Okay.
Just to change the terminology.
Yeah, and that's an industry shift.
It is an industry shift, but I will say that is one that, in internal staff is recommending we actually keep. They were originally recommending that we don't keep it because the definition of mobile home limits them to the date to 1976 or before. But apparently there was a recent instance of that mobile home being moved to a different site. And so it sounds like there is still the potential of that land use being utilized and meeting the definition of mobile home. So that one is one that internal staff is recommending.
So the mobile home is something that can come and go, whereas your
manufactured home,
you're assuming manufacturing home will stay put.
Right.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And essentially, under I think state law, they're considered the same as a single family residence. They have to be treated the same. That gets us through that. Attachment 3, I won't spend a ton of time going through, but that one does show a comparison of the level of permit review for uses that are being proposed to be combined, just so you can see the impacts that has as it translates to those new uses from the original use.
See a lot of footnote numbers up there.
So, just a quick question that occurred to me when I saw bed and breakfast under residential use. I assume hotels are not residential use.
They are currently, but we're proposing them to shift them to commercial. So they are currently listed under the residential categorical uses, but it's one. Hotels, motels are ones that we're proposing to shift to commercial land use.
If they're permitted as a, if they're classified as a residential use, are they then, they're not permitted in commercial areas?
No, they are. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but at the same time, that's kind of where the, what is it? The online rental.
Vacation rental.
The vacation rentals almost should be thrown into a hotel category.
Yeah.
I would tend to argue it based on my own background, which would be that there's two completely different books of code and law related to one and two bedroom and everything else. IRC versus IBC.
A hotel is a public commercial building. I would argue the use is almost exactly the same because it is a come and go temporarily. It's not a
two or more bedrooms, 120 bedrooms, different building.
120 bedrooms, that's probably not going to have a whole lot of people who are going to be staying put there for very long periods of time. The VRBO, for example, can very easily flip back to a single-family residence, though.
Yeah.
It's not.
Well,
I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion that its entire life as a structure is going to be as a rent.
I don't think.
And this is an argument that we're letting another group have to suffer through. So.
Yeah. Well, and I guess my concern, I know part of the drivers for this change are to how do you incent some uses we. In terms of hotels in the county, I mean, we're sad.
Getting better.
Well, yeah. Not much. But, I think it's a use that could be encouraged, in the right locations. Certainly.
So shifting gears, if everyone's okay with this, we posed a kind of question to the group. That I'd like to dive into and get some feedback on because it's one we're wrestling with, to be honest. So in your packet, we really would like to obtain your input on allowing commercial uses in residential zones and vice versa. In particular, looking at like the urban low and urban cluster residential, your urban medium and urban high zones. We heard in the survey results that folks would like to see more small scale businesses and services within their neighborhoods be built. So things like restaurants or grocery stores. And in looking at the purpose and intent of these zones, there's this term that keeps popping up, community services. And that could really be interpreted in a number of ways. We did do a little bit of research into how it's defined in other jurisdictions. And Carmen, I don't know if you want to kind of speak to that really quickly, what you found.
Yeah, so on a brief delve into like APA's planning dictionary and some surrounding jurisdictions that define this term, it was not regularly defined straight out, but it was incorporated in some other definitions where they would have the phrase community services and then list off some examples of what those are. And common ones that I saw were community center, Boys and Girls Club, food bank, homeless shelters. So pretty much non-commercial type uses, libraries, things like that. And so they would also separate residential, commercial, and then community services. But on the other hand, there could be interpreted some small scale retail businesses like a grocery store or things like that.
And the use, when we were wrestling with this in Redmond, was neighborhood commercial. And it really was kind of almost the third rail, because there are a lot of people that come. I grew up in Detroit, and you could walk to the store and get milk and that kind of thing. Yet small stores were everywhere, you know, in the major urban centers. A lot of people, you know, don't necessarily want a retail outlet in their neighborhood, theoretically. I mean, I had one lady when I was on the planning commission, you know, tell us, you know, why would I send my kid to walk for milk when I can just drive? But it's a push me pull you, I think, with neighbors as to whether they want that. Although now there's an increasing focus, I think, on walkability in neighborhoods where this becomes part of the goals. Rick?
Yeah, and again, this is a huge bugaboo in Silverdale during the recession. We, in 2006, put the West Hill section of Silverdale was going to be mixed use, six-story buildings. And what we saw as recession went through, that became the blighted area of Silverdale. We had houses with roofs caved in. As a community council, we could not get it cleaned up. There was no ability or no interest in investing. There was no market for Ballard on the West Hill of Silverdale. Yeah. And so we were stuck with this awful situation where a gateway to Silverdale was falling apart because DCD in 2006 had a vision of Ballard in Seattle or in Silverdale. And so when I saw tonight, we're saying, geez, you know, for a commercial, we're going to require a residential component. I can just relive this whole awful circumstance we had in Silverdale.
So right now, the footnote you're referencing is footnote 37. So that exists as in code today.
I understand.
And so the question, I guess, to the group is that something we need to protect in the urban low or require in the urban low or urban cluster residential or urban medium and urban high residential zones?
Yeah, and again, what I think the experience we had in Silverdale throughout this was too much staff, too much decision of what the vision should be, no focus on the market.
Sure.
You know, just here's our vision, here's what the world should be like. We don't care if it actually is supportable commercially or anybody's going to actually do this. This is what you shall do. Mm-hmm. So when we start making those kind of decisions, there's consequence. Mm-hmm. And we felt it in Silverdale for 5 years.
Right. So am I hearing you say that particular footnote is too much of a barrier to investment?
I would encourage, and to some extent, some of this is let the market decide where, and I know there's this vision we should take and let's put housing in the Costco parking lot. You know, that makes more walkability, it makes more sense, but there's no market.
There's an awful lot of critical mass and transit availability and all of the things that go into making that urbanist paradigm work in a community. I think that neighborhood commercials should be allowed if the market trends that way. But I have seen during the recession in Redmond where We required all the ground floor space to be reserved for retail and built to retail specifications, and it just sat empty, you know, for years. And those units, ground floor units, could have been repurposed into residential or low income residential or less, you know, less expensive housing, but there was a requirement that that be there. So,
and that's similar to what we're now on a completely different pathway trying to undo in Kingston as well.
Exactly. Right.
And a great example of, you know, a permit that I'm now working on as of, because January 1st, the 1/3 commercial piece at the KVC overlay is removed, right? And so a street like Maine or Ohio, or which is all single family, right? If I own something at the end of that street and I wanted to do something multifamily, well, that commercial would have sat empty too. And you guys recognize that through nobody investing, right? And the change is going to bring the outcome that fits the neighborhood. So I actually really like the terminology of neighborhood commercial or neighborhood, you know, versus community something or other, because if I start hearing YMCA in an area where, in my mind, I only live with 40 other houses, I'm freaking out, right? Because we live in it.
But what if a restaurant went into that area? Would you freak out? Just playing devil's advocate.
No, and again, the push-pull, right? We live in a society that Jeff Bezos has created that convenience is everything, right? So I want to be able to get to it in 2 minutes, or I want to have it delivered to my door, but oh my God, don't put that so close to my house, right? The NIMBY side comes out in you after you have what you think you need, and now we'd like the rest of everybody else to stop.
Well, and the neighborhood commercial would always be a CUP. You know, I think that it's important to have very tight controls over retail and residential of any kind.
Is that something everybody would agree with?
Yeah. I mean, you don't want the 24-hour gas station going in, or, you know, anything that has deliveries at 4 a.m. and,
right,
you know, things like that.
See, store with beer and cigarettes, probably don't want that within a 60-second walk of my house and my teenagers, right? You get that. But it can be done in process and still be allowed to be considered by the investor.
But I think the scale of that hypothetical restaurant is very, very critical in neighborhood commercial. So you need to, you know, be able to get a handle on scale on these commercial uses.
And I think that's one of the reasons why we started looking at how do you break down some of these use categories by scale, because the little neighborhood store like you described is a very, very different kind of an impact than a Safeway. And, you know, having a sit-down restaurant with a big parking lot versus a little neighborhood diner where you can pick up a sandwich and run is a very different kind of impact.
Just returning to Silverdale, the West Hill area where the high school was built out, again, there was a big push coming out of the recession, basically put commercial all along Anderson Hill Road. Mm-hmm. And so the neighborhood commercial, you say, geez, there's already two stores on this strip, so we're not going to have it anymore. I don't think you can. Mm-hmm. So that's the concern. You take what is kind of a neighborhood, and now it's new, small business. Mm-hmm. The neighborhood's gone. There's no houses there anymore. So it's just commercial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the neighborhood commercial, you know, overlay or zone or, you know, use that would be allowed, you know, really does need the neighborhood component.
Yeah.
I mean, because you wouldn't want to put a restaurant with two parking spaces,
right,
you know, anywhere
right
besides a developed neighborhood, you know, or a planned neighborhood, you know, as an amenity. The most common use that we heard of what people did want was like a coffee shop. They wanted to have a Starbucks,
right,
or a neighborhood gathering place. Mm-hmm.
Right. You take any, you know, three or four storefronts above the ferry in Kingston, right? The Ale House to Drifters, or you take those, I think, are what we envision, both in height, scale, square footage, and feel.
Mm-hmm.
Would feel okay around the corner.
Yeah,
like a Mossback, yeah. Or you want a couple of the Polsbo storefronts, the new dog store, and then the Tisley's version that's quiet, at least, you know, that kind of feel.
Liz, I believe there was a footnote, I think 28, that was another option that specified.
So, yeah, footnote 28 also specifies that's the crossroad yes. intersection footnote, which could be applied instead of 37 requiring that residential component for commercial uses. It could require that those commercial uses be located on, you know, a crossroad intersection, so you're not seeing it in, you know, in the heart of a neighborhood. You know, so there's ways that we could manage it, but outright requiring the commercial and residential component to be congruent within those residential zones was something that we felt may provide too much of a barrier to investment.
Yeah, I like the idea that maybe it has to at least be a collector, you know, sure. a 30 mile an hour or more. Yeah, right. There's other ways to define that. It had to be, you know, under 4,000 square feet per suite.
Sure.
The scale, I think, is really important.
Okay. Well, when you think about it, the least desirable house in the neighborhood is, in most cases, the one on the corner because they get the most traffic. Everybody cuts the corner and that sort of thing. But yet, that's the most desirable from a commercial perspective.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Because it has the most visibility.
Mm-hmm. What about flipping this on the other side? So, residential uses in commercial zones. Right now, we predominantly allow multifamily in most of our zones. I don't think we're looking at any recommended changes that would, I should caveat that and take a look at our changes. But, you know, duplexes, for example, in some of the commercial zones, as long as they're achieving minimum density, would that be an appropriate use of the land in those zones?
The Kitsap Development Council, we went through a year of study trying to say how do we get residential into Silverdale, and how do we make it less of a mall? And I think the idea is probably a good thing, but it should be market driven as opposed to saying here's what you shall.
But allowable allows it to be market-driven, right?
Right. And I agree with you. I think allowing it because you have a source of potentially less expensive housing if you're living in a commercial zone. I mean, it depends. You know, some people, you know, like the walkable mall, you know, kind of experience. But typically, if it's in a more intense use, it's you know, it can be less expensive and more affordable. So, yeah, I think it would be. It'd be fine as long as, you know, the minimum density is met.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I mean, if it works with the UGA and the places you guys get pushed on from above, right, to make those things work per jurisdiction, per neighborhood, you know, if it works on your end, the developer will decide that it works on their end financially, and you'll see it happen. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it won't. But if it's not even allowed, then you're taking away an opportunity for mixed use. You know, of course I'm going to say, okay, in the downtown six blocks around Costco, we should start thinking vertical type mixed use, right? Mm-hmm. But either way, I think it has, as a general commentary, mm-hmm. having residential be available as an opportunity to develop a piece of land near bus stops and restaurants, and I think the short answer is yes.
So, one thing that we touched on in our last discussion on this was the notion that we have some zones that are so close that they are almost identical mm-hmm. because we allow commercial in some of our residential zones and we allow residential in almost all of our other zones. If we look at, correct me if I'm wrong on the zones here, Liz, but the urban high commercial and the high residential.
So the urban medium and urban high?
The urban high residential.
Yeah.
And the commercial.
Yeah.
The uses are, the allowed uses are almost identical. So the question is, would we be okay moving towards just making them identical and queuing it up so that way when we do the next comp plan update, they're merged?
Well, isn't that what we've done with Silverdale County Regional Center? I mean, that's what we essentially have already done.
Very close.
Just on the zoning
right
code, it hasn't caught up, but that's
Yeah.
We've already adopted.
I mean, it's almost raising the question. I guess for me, it's raising the question: should we just merge the two and call it a high intensity mixed use or something like that?
Yeah.
And I think from what I'm hearing here is, if it allows flexibility, it allows the market to come into play to say, yes, this is what I can do here. I can place the money. I can develop this. People want to live here, then why not? I mean, I'm sure there'll be a few of the old timers that, you know, don't want to do it, but
we'll have that no matter what we do.
Yeah. So, you know.
Got a way around that?
Yeah. No.
Almost a form based zoning approach.
It is kind of leading to that. Yeah. It's kind of funny.
Well, that's not all bad sometimes.
No, it's not.
But question here.
Yes.
Why for cottage housing developments is it an A cup? Whereas single family residential is not.
So single family residential, I don't think we're proposing to permit. Can you scroll down? Oh, we are. Okay. No, that's condominiums.
Yeah. Yep. Actually, that was in high intensity commercial, and that, I think we got there because that was one of those questions that we asked: are we allowing a use that would preclude the underlying intent of the zone?
Right. Yeah. Yes.
So, for example, would you want something that housing that's taking up a large land base that is not allowing actual high intensity commercial to develop there?
Mm-hmm. You know, to the extent that you merge those two concepts, you know, a cottage housing development is a great use for you know, in terms of integrating housing into a commercial area, mm-hmm. much better than the 5-1.
Yeah,
you know, in terms of a you know desirability. I mean, that stuff those sell fast.
Right. And a transition. You know, the idea that we want residential in your urban area like Silverdale, make it easy
right.
to bring it in, as opposed to you've got to build a 5-1 six story building.
Yeah. I think it was more so being not wanting to open the door completely, because prior to this it was a prohibited use in those zones. And so still wanting to recognize that there may need to be some level of land use review based on the unique circumstances of a cottage development, and wanting to just have that review rather than permitting it outright.
Well, I mean, to the extent that a developer can come into an area with a 25 single-family home development and not face an A-cup, why would you...
Well, I don't. In these particular zones, yeah, they couldn't come in with a single family subdivision. That wouldn't be allowed. It would have to be either attached condominium or townhouse type development. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing you correctly, you would be an advocate for making that a P for cottage housing.
Yeah, for cottage housing, I think it's a great transition for folks that aren't necessarily wanting to share walls yet or ever. Yeah. You know, it is a more intense use of the land than.
Well, I will clarify one point on that, and I've noticed this in the Silverdale area, new housing. All housing is now multi-floored.
Right.
And for an older person looking at, oh, I have to have a two- or three-story house now to have a house, cottage is aimed at one floor, one level. Mm-hmm. So...
does provide for diversity of housing.
Right.
Yes.
I think it's for a different discussion, but one of the most frustrating things I've seen are not this part, but we've got the urban low surrounding us, and we've got houses, you know, single-family homes that are on an acre, and they've got an ADU, and they want to split off the ADU and sell the ADU. It makes sense. They've got, you know, more room, but the approach from the county has been, nope. Need to develop it to 5-9. Mm-hmm. Sorry, you can't do it. So, you know, part of the frustration is we have opportunities, but we've made decisions in the urban low saying, no, we're not going to do this piecemeal. You got to do it all or nothing. Mm-hmm. And so let's make it easy somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's low hanging fruit to more affordable housing options, yeah. I think.
Okay. Sounds good.
So did we answer the question?
I feel, I mean, I'm going to look at the team, but I feel like, yes, you did provide a lot of clarity on this.
Yeah, because that was one question that came up, and we encountered it in several zones. You know, I just mentioned the one specifically because it's the one that jumps out to me. But we encountered it in several zones, and you know, everything that we've been talking about in our previous discussions and that we've talked about among staff, it all tends to be leaning less to the, you know, the Euclidean residential, commercial, never the twain shall touch, and versus the opportunity for doing mixed use with some variation and, you know, make life a little interesting, you know, and be able to respond to market conditions, which are a very real thing and a major driver. So, you know, it's lending itself to, okay, why wouldn't we just cue ourselves up to aiming at mixed use? And I don't think we can do that in this particular update because it's creating a land use change that we don't currently have in our comp plan. But what we can do is by aligning certain zones,
you're prepping them.
We can cue it up so that way in 2024 or 2025, whichever our next update is going to come, you know, we're already there and it's a minor change at that point.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, to Rick's point, you know, the term mixed use development, at least in this region, has come to be synonymous with 501, where you've got ground floor retail and all that. And to the extent that we as a county start to think outside the box and make that a more inclusive category with interesting housing products, that's all to the good.
Well, I'm from Chicago. That's what everything was there.
That's right.
Exactly. Yep. Okay. Perfect. So we've got about a half hour of time scheduled for this. Are we still good kind of moving into the last bullet of tonight's discussion, which is to review any proposed land uses and the level of permit review that the commissioners would like to talk about specifically? So that's your attachment two in your packet that has the definitions and the markup of the table. So I don't know if there's specific ones that you want to dive into or if you're feeling like we're on target kind of for the trajectory of this. So I'll pose the question to you and see what kind of discussion ensues.
Yeah. Well, I blurred out my expected ask, which is, how's the definition of ADU and ALQ coming along?
Yep. So if you want to turn to page one of attachment two, in your packet, and Darren, if you want to, we can bring it up on the screen here so you can see it.
Zooming in.
Yep. So you'll note accessory dwelling unit detached is your former ALQ.
ADU.
Okay. Sorry. And your accessory dwelling unit attached is your ALQ. So we're proposing a name change there. So that's the first change you'll see.
This actually aligns it a little bit better with some of our neighboring jurisdictions.
Right. And then you can read the definitions for each as they're proposed.
And I'm looking at Aaron and Herman. Did we not discuss? Oh, I'm sorry. As I recall, I thought we had discussed on the sharing of a common heated wall that we needed a dimension on that. And I think what we had talked about was 4 feet, so you can have a door.
It's not that the door had to be in, and this goes back to the private conversations with
Mr.
Remack, right? Was. Yeah. In a facetious tone, well, okay, so if 6 inches of wall touch, are we good?
Yeah.
Right? And you guys had an internal document that you had been using for interpretation that was much clearer than anything we had publicly at the time, which is why I brought this up. But that is really kind of the question that I think you could lean on other jurisdictions from, does the shared heated wall have enough space for a door? I mean, if the idea really was mother-in-law, adjacent and available, but private, is the width enough for a door, right? I just, much like you say, over, what does that say, over the garage and attached to the dwelling. What if the dwelling is only one story? Is the heated stairway, is that the common wall, and is that good enough?
Well, and if you're lower level, if you have a several levels or two or three, and the lower level is contained and has a kitchen and a bathroom and a separate entrance to the outside, I mean, you're sharing a heated floor,
yeah,
but not a heated wall.
Yeah, floor ceiling, because lots of daylight basement.
Yeah.
And I know in Pierce County that would be considered an ADU.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I that kind of flexibility, I, you know.
Right. And I think if I've seen, and I have, the internal memo, the idea was that this over the garage thing, that there's overlap, right? Well, but the stair, a heated stair might be that. I think you just got to be careful. Go back to the graphic that you guys have in-house with Mr. Remack and make sure that what you're saying matches how you're interpreting. I think we're still not quite there.
Okay.
And you should, I think, just knowing our own topography on many of our parcels around the water and sloping, and you may want to also say vertical shared.
Yeah, yeah.
Heating, floor, ceiling.
Yeah. Well, I remember a couple of years ago, the discussion was going, okay, well, can you connect them by a fence? Mm. You know, or does it have to be under a common roof line? Or, you know, questions like that.
Well, that's the pitch I made on the project in Kingston, was that it's all under one roof line. She wanted privacy. She asked to go through the garage. So should I put two cadet heaters in the garage and tell you we're good? I had other ways to skin that cat, but it was a little snarky.
Yeah. How about just on, how about on improvements? So if I got a dwelling unit attached, if I have an ADU, separate unit, I need my own septic, I need my own water source. I can't hook up that three connections to up a well. If I'm sharing a well with a neighbor, I can't have an ADU unless I come up with another water source. But a dwelling unit attached, do I have to have an independent water source for the new unit?
So that's one of the big expenses of an ADU is the separate water.
The water, but again, how about with an attached? I
don't have the answer, but okay. We can certainly ask.
Well, and that's, I'm just wondering again, what I'm looking for is affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. I can say from personal experience in Pierce, it needs to be a separate meter, whether it needs to be a separate water source is a different question.
Well, here again, it's all wells.
Yeah, the separate meter creates the same issue.
Yeah.
That's where the expense and the cost is. So how's Pierce County doing in their targets? I mean, how many ADUs are they getting?
I couldn't say that.
I would love to see those stats if they allow a little bit, you know, different configurations than what Kitsap has historically had. Are they seeing more of that?
I know when I started at Kitsap, the one thing that jumped out at me was the way Kitsap splits out ADUs versus ALQs versus guest houses and things like that. It seemed like it was really finely split to me, whereas my understanding of them in Pierce County is that they're pretty much all lumped under accessory dwelling units. But you do still have to have separate water. You still do have to have a separate address,
right,
for them. You can't have them all under the same address.
You can tell me if this is something that is being talked about separately. We don't need to discuss it, but I'm curious about tiny homes, if that's something that people are looking into. Mm-hmm. I assume that would be considered a mobile home and not be permitted, or...
There's a separate category.
There is, yeah. We're proposing.
I searched tiny homes and I didn't find it.
Let me see. Here it is. So on page 2 of attachment 2, so essentially there's a new use being proposed that would allow for tiny home, you know, developments.
Right. So that's more like a state park. I'm thinking more people are, you know, like I just bought a piece of property and I will probably, it's not in Kitsap County, so I'll probably put a tiny home on it until I figure out what else I'm going to do with it.
Sure.
Or a lot of people are wanting to use them as ADUs. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious if that's something that is under discussion.
And I would have to check with our current planners if that would fall under dwelling, just single-family detached, as a land use.
Well, wouldn't it just be an ADU? A tiny home, whether it's a tiny home or it's under 900 square
feet. If it's got a dwelling on it already.
If there's an existing dwelling.
It's the primary dwelling.
Oh, I see. So I thought you were saying you already have one.
Okay. Yeah.
So the county doesn't have any minimum square footage requirements for single dwelling. Family.
Not
I think it's 700.
You would know better than I.
Or on skids or something doesn't make a difference. There's no requirement that it be on a foundation.
So I believe there is some internal director's interpretations related to that. So I would want to clarify before giving you a direct answer in terms of how that would play out just as a standalone use.
Yeah. And I can just imagine it's something that's going to start coming up
absolutely.
If it hasn't already.
Yeah.
No, we get the question because a lot of people are doing brainstorming. We haven't seen a lot of installations, but there's a lot of people who are going who are doing the work.
Maybe didn't hear about them, but
yeah.
And because
there are plenty
of
them that we don't know about.
Yeah. Well, no, a lot of them use like composting toilets and things like that, so they're off grid.
Right. The way the wheel piece puts it in the RV category, and then it's composting like a boat, right?
If I can hide a shed under my tree line, I can hide a tiny home.
Yep.
So
you
we'll
don't
ask
have
that
to
question,
hide it if you make it the
and
right
see
size.
If there's need. Because it was
shed.
Definitely something that came up in the survey, I believe, was we were asking about tiny homes and kind of mother-in-law suites and those different types of residential housing units.
I just remember the puzzle of what to do with the legacy lots in Manchester, And a tiny home might make the setbacks.
That's a good point.
That's a great point. And just from a diversity
just need
to figure of housing.
Out water.
There was at least one where it was just going to be a recreational use because it was just too small. So.
And that's what those were developed for.
Right.
Anyway.
Garden hose from the main house and on demand.
Any other uses that really struck out? Or stuck out to you as you were looking through this?
No.
Okay. So you guys think we're on track then? There's no glaring issues that you're seeing?
Well, we got the footnote problem.
So. Yeah.
What's the net?
Yeah.
Let's see what we morph footnotes into bigger, better design standards. That's for the next meeting.
Mm-hmm. And we weren't intending to provide you with a track change version of those, more so just conceptual at this point, just because we've been throwing a lot of content at you. But with that being said, the kind of document that provides an overview of that reformatting will tell you where things would shift from their current locations to future locations and give you an idea of what we're thinking. The goal is not to add more restrictions to these uses, but there are some development standards within our footnotes currently that probably should remain, and so it's just a matter of reorganizing them in a way that's more predictable for our customers.
Well, it feels like each time you come before us, we're doing a nice job of funneling
converging.
In
we're
with
converging.
Each. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I think as long as you keep in that, in your foreground of your site that. The goal is, it's okay if it expands, but if it expands for simplicity,
right. Yes.
Understanding,
yep.
And then where opportunity for flexibility to let market. The development minds tell you whether or not it pencils
sure. Yep.
Without being upsetting to the neighbors. I think those are great things to hold true to.
Yeah. And to the extent that development standards can be moved out of footnotes
yes.
To the greatest extent possible and
have
a link
everybody happy, I think.
Next to it to the actual place in the code where it's going to live as no development with you guys. I would like to see none in the
that may be the one part about this that where we've seen universal agreement. So Liz mentioned one thing earlier on it that I'd like to circle back on for just a minute.
Aaron, do you want to jump in before that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Just point of order. At some point, I didn't know if public input passed item E, F, or G of our meeting agenda. Look, I didn't call it minutes. There was a hand in the audience. I just did not want to lose sight of that.
Right. Well, you know, can we take a short pause here and invite you gentlemen up to come over to the podium and tell us what's on your mind?
I don't recall which section had your...
I will...
Yeah, you can have my mic. I'm done.
Okay, we'll be returning to item D, general comment. Now, these are comments on items that are not before the commission tonight, not on the agenda.
Okay.
Please state your name.
My name is Matthew Brown. I'm from the east side, but my wife and I are planning on moving over here in the near future. There's multiple things that we came to get a general feel for. A lot of those items were answered in the questioning. When I raised my hand, my brother and I, this is my brother, Doug, we are both airline captains, and so we have some background with airports and airport training, and my comment had to do with maybe clarifying some of the differences between training and private pilot, stuff like that, and because we've gone through both of those processes, I had a comment to maybe clarify, hopefully, for you guys some
yeah,
of that.
Great.
The comment was pilot training specifically requires pattern work, like what you're talking about, right, where you're going in circles. That's going to be way more prevalent in pilot training than in the private pilot world. Typically, private pilots, if they need to keep current, if you say, they only need to keep current if they're going to fly other passengers, and they only need to do that 3 takeoffs and landings in 90 days. So the probability that a private pilot is going to be doing a lot of pattern work is very low, but training facilities, that is a huge portion of what you do as a pilot in your initial training is pattern work, just going in circles and circles and circles. So that was a clarifying point. On other topics, my brother and I are here as part of a group of potential investors in the area, and we're on the development side of that investment team, and we wanted to get a feel for the zoning practices that you guys share and this type of thing with where the future's headed with this, maybe some growth statistics and stuff to help us back up our development plan that we're putting together for future development in this area. And so that's the side that we're on, zoning and development process of this with some outside investors. So that's why we're here.
Well, we have an excellent staff here in Kitsap County, and I'm sure one of them can hand off a card that you could contact them and set up a meeting to get just some more specific information on that. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah. Thanks for hanging in there.
Out. Yeah.
That's somebody else's card. Well, that would be a sleight of hand.
Right?
Giving him Dave's card. Huh? Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Okay. So you were going to jump into...
Yes. Liz mentioned that we would like to try to take some of these other areas of code that are kind of a standalone pieces for certain uses and try to build them back into the standards for the specific zones and or the use definitions and that sort of thing. There may be a few limitations. We're trying to figure out how we can manage. We want to manage the scope of this. We're trying hard not to let the scope creep into everything. So things like... some of the gnarly ones that we've discussed are the wireless communications facilities code. That's one that you know, my suggestion on that one is let's just leave that where that is for now. We can build the use into the table, but as a code section with all the regulatory requirements, it's just so technical and so deep. Let's just leave that where it is, and the same discussion came up for the ag code as well.
Yeah, it's such a specific use, for people that use the wireless communications facilities code, it's anticipated it will be a separate chapter. I mean, when it's not, it's a nightmare to go to each zone and find chunks of development standards hither and yon.
Exactly.
It's easier to just have it be in one big section.
Yeah. And at this point, we're thinking the same for the ag code because it has roots growing everywhere into the code. We can define it as a land use, but we may, at least in this iteration, keep that separate. I think some of the others that you and Carmen brought up, we may be able to build those in, but we'll just kind of take that on a case-by-case basis so we can manage workload.
Yeah. We were thinking the transitory accommodations would be one that we could potentially pull into our new framework, and then the marijuana establishments as well. So regulations around those land uses pretty easily could fall under, you know, you've got your definition sections, which within each one of those chapters, your level of permissibility, and then unique standards to those uses, where we could easily incorporate them into the new framework. Ag and wireless are unique creatures.
So we're like prisons.
We're trying to
manage workload, because we are already seeing some schedule slippage, and that translates into staffing impacts and everything else that, you know, I know you all understand. So I won't dwell on that, but, you know, just know that we're trying to keep the sideboards up on this.
Okay. Next steps are?
So our next meeting, next week on Tuesday, we'll be sending out packet materials likely tomorrow, Thursday at the latest, for your review. It's not as many pages as this, so I think you're looking at an updated and revised summary document, which we went through tonight with those guiding questions and some of the lumping and splitting. We won't spend a ton of time going through that all again, just trying to highlight some of the changes that we've discussed. And then there's one document that just provides kind of the overview framework of the new structure of code, and then the revised project schedule. So it's not going to be a long meeting next week, Tuesday. So just wanted to let you guys know that that'll give you an idea then moving forward of when we'll be bringing this back before the Planning Commission. Looks like the schedule has us doing community outreach again on this proposed draft in November and December of this year. And then coming back to the Planning Commission for actual consideration of that draft in February, I think, is when we're looking at for work study sessions again ahead of a hearing. So you'll have a little reprieve on the use table, and if there's things that pop up in terms of development standards or questions, we can always bring it to another meeting. But at this point, we're not anticipating having too many more sessions on this project.
Okay. Any other questions on this topic for staff? Okay.
Thank you. This was a really great conversation.
Thank you for the hard work.
Yes. Thank you.
And for making the vast universe
it's converging.
Copable here. Yeah. All right. With that, on to the administrative update, Dave.
I really don't have anything to report on. No announcement yet on the assistant director positions. They're still not filled. Interviews are completed for one of them, but nothing to report. So,
okay.
Quick question to that. It's personal work-wise. IRC IBC usually transitions the July 1 after the new books came out, which would have been this past July 1. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing June of next year. Is that still a valid thing floating out there?
You, okay. I can look into it.
Okay.
Any other questions? Anything else for the good of the order?
There was no chirping.
What?
There was no chirping.
That's because they're all on.
Because they stayed on.
Yes, we're validated.
Darren wanted you to know that he likes the smell of hops cooking. That's for the good of the order.
That's fine. All right.
I made no mention of that.
So noted. All right. With that, without objection, let's adjourn.
Thank you.
Everybody, next week.
And my